I want to start today with a number that it genuinely stopped me in my tracks when I was reading through our material. 2 million.
It's a massive number.
It really is. We're talking about 2 million people. Between 2011 and 2016, the number of active hunters in the U.S. just dropped by over 2 million.
And to put that into context, that's a 16% decline.
In 5 years.
Yeah, in just 5 years. I mean, it's staggering. If you saw a 16% drop in users on a big tech platform, investors would be jumping out of windows.
Absolutely. In the outdoor world, this isn't a gentle slope. The data calls it a cliff.
It is a cliff.
And my first thought, and I think this is where a lot of people go, was to blame, the usual cultural things.
Video games.
Video games, exactly. Or maybe people just don't have the patience to sit in a tree stand anymore. Maybe it's the cost of gear.
Right, the Netflix effect. We just assume everyone wants to stay inside.
Yeah.
But when we dug into the sources for this deep dive, the reports from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the analysis from the American Hunting Lease Association, those assumptions just, well, they didn't hold up.
No, they really didn't. The desire is still there. People have the gear.
But they don't have the land.
That was the big revelation. The single greatest hurdle wasn't interest, it was access. You can have the best rifle, the best gear, all the passion in the world, but if you have nowhere to go,
You're grounded.
you're grounded. And that really is the core of our deep dive today. We're not just talking about a hobby in decline. We're looking at a structural failure, and interestingly, a tech solution built to fix it.
Precisely. We're going to look at how the American Hunting Lease Association, or the AHLA, is trying to tackle this crisis with a platform called LeaseSpotter.
It's basically trying to be the Airbnb for the hunting world.
Or the Zillow, yeah. It's a fascinating case study. We're going to explore how it works, why they had to get away from, the Wild West of Craigslist, and the whole economic argument that suggests this might be the only way to save that heritage.
Okay, but before we get to the app, I want to unpack this crisis just a little more. You mentioned that 16% drop. Our sources call it a disheartening and industry-threatening trend. Why is it so threatening? Is it really just about selling less gear?
It goes so much deeper than retail. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they do this huge national survey every 5 years. It's the gold standard.
Right.
And when the 2016 results came out, it was a major wake-up call because hunting, at its core, relies on mentorship.
It's a generational thing.
Exactly. You don't just wake up at 35 and decide, I'm going to become a hunter. You learn from a parent, an uncle, a grandparent. The
Yeah.
fear is that if this trend keeps going, that tradition just
A
breaks.
chain gets broken.
Yes. If a father loses his spide and he spends a few years trying and failing to find a new one, he eventually just stops. And if he stops, his kids never start.
That makes perfect sense. But let me play devil's advocate for a second. The U.S. is huge. We have millions of acres of public land, national forests, BLM land. Why is access the bottleneck? Can't you just go there?
You can, and a lot of people do, but the experience is fundamentally different. Public land, by definition, is open to everyone, which means it can be incredibly overcrowded,
So high pressure.
very high pressure, and often low reward.
Yeah.
You might wake up at 3 in the morning, hike for 2 hours to a spot, only to find someone else is already there.
Not a great experience, especially for a beginner.
Exactly. The quality habitat, the places where you're likely to have a safe, quiet, successful experience, that's almost all on private land. Farms, timber tracts, that kind of thing.
And getting on that land has changed, right? I mean, the days of knocking on a farmer's door with a handshake or.
They're largely over, yes. With liability concerns and, a more disconnected society, that handshake deal just faded away. Landowners are worried about lawsuits.
Which is where the American Hunting Lease Association comes in. And their COO, Sean Verbrugge, had a really interesting take. He said fixing this doesn't start with the hunter.
Correct. He argues it actually starts with the landowner.
Which feels a little backward at first.
It does. Until you think of it like a supply chain, the landowner holds the keys to the inventory. If you can't convince them to open the gate, the hunter has nowhere to shop. You have to solve the landowner's problems first.
Okay, so let's talk about their solution, LeaseSpotter. On the surface, it's a listing site. You have land, I want land. But what makes this different from just a Craigslist ad?
The price tag, or I should say, the lack of one. The sources really hammer this home. It is 100% free for both sides.
That is surprising. There's usually a subscription fee or a finder's fee, something. Why give it away?
It's a strategic move. If your entire mission is to lower the barrier and flood the market with options to stop that decline,
You can't put up a paywall.
you can't. They're going for volume. They need every farmer with 50 acres to feel like listing is a no-brainer. frictionless.
But free often means, you know, quality control issues. We've all heard the Craigslist horror stories. You show up to see a paradise, and it's a swamp behind a mall.
Or a flat-out scam. And that's the Wild West thing Sean Verbraeck talks about. The real problem with those sites is the anonymity.
So how does Lisa Spotter solve that?
Through accountability.
Yeah.
It's a simple mechanism, but it's effective. Every single user, landowner, or hunter has to create a registered account before they can list or even browse the listings.
So no anonymous lurking?
No lurking. Verbraeck says this maintains a level of accountability. If you have to register with an actual organization, verify an email, you're just far less likely to be a scammer. It creates a baseline of trust.
Which is the currency you need? Okay, let's walk through it. Say I'm a landowner in Ohio with 200 acres. What's my experience?
The sources call it a secure marketing tool. They've built a 5-step workflow. It guides you. You upload pictures, describe the property, set your price, your rules.
And I'm in control of it.
Complete control. That's the key phrase they use. You review it before it goes live. You handle the inquiries yourself. And this is a big one. The moment you find the right group, you can take the listing down instantly.
Oh, that's huge. No more getting calls for months after it's gone.
Exactly. It's real-time inventory management.
All right, now flip it. I'm a hunter with a few friends. Why am I using this instead of just Googling around?
Efficiency. Before, the market was so fragmented, you'd have to check dozens of tiny regional leasing company websites, one for this county, another for the one next door.
It's a central hub.
It's an aggregator. You could search the whole country or drill down to a specific price range. But here's the part that really puts it over the top, and it's a detail that's easy to miss.
Okay.
It's not just individual landowners.
Right. The certified associates. Who are they?
These are the pros. Professional hunting lease brokers and, get this, foresters. The AHLA lets these certified pros list their managed properties on LeaseSpotter too.
So timber companies.
Timber companies, land management groups. We're talking huge tracts of land, thousands of acres that are professionally managed, which often creates fantastic habitat.
So you're not just seeing the small family farm.
You're seeing the corporate inventory right alongside it. Sean Verbraeck says this is what makes it a game changer. It combines those two streams, the private individual and the professional broker, and just explodes the number of opportunities available.
That makes a ton of sense. You're scaling the supply to meet that demand. But let's circle back to the why for the landowner. We talked about trust. But trust doesn't pay the property taxes. What's the real incentive to let strangers on your land?
The AHLA calls it the undeniable upside, and it's all about economics and management. First, obviously, is revenue.
Sure.
Owning land is expensive. Property taxes, upkeep. A hunting lease can help you recoup those costs. It can be the difference that keeps a family farm in the black.
Passive income, but there's more to it.
Oh, yeah. Security. This one's a little counterintuitive. You'd think more people means less security. But vacant land is a magnet for trespassers.
Right. Illegal dumping, poaching.
Exactly. When you lease it to a group of hunters, you suddenly have eyes on the ground. People who paid for exclusive access and have a vested interest in keeping other people out.
It's like having a security guard who pays you to be there.
It really is. And then there's the agricultural side. Crop depredation. Deer can wipe out a farmer's profits. Having hunters manage that population is a direct benefit to the harvest. So you get revenue, security, and crop protection. It's a pretty compelling package.
And for the hunter, the reward is obviously access, but it's also about the kind of access. The source mentions exclusivity.
Yes, that's the key difference. On a lease, it's just you and your group. No more worrying about someone else walking in on your spot. It's a safer, more controlled, higher quality experience.
Yeah, which brings us back to the big picture, the conservation angle. The analysis suggests this isn't just about hunting, it's about actually saving the land. How does that work?
Well, it's the concept of retention. When land stops being profitable, what happens?
It gets sold.
It gets sold. And especially near growing towns, it gets developed. It becomes a subdivision. The hunting lease model gives a landowner a revenue stream that allows them to keep owning the land.
So the lease payment is the buffer against the for sale sign.
Precisely. The source calls the hunting lease the most versatile tool for the future of habitat. By monetizing the access, you keep the habitat intact. If the land pays for itself, it gets to stay as woods and fields.
That turns the hunter into a partner in conservation.
It creates a symbiotic relationship. The financial health of the landowner and the recreational needs of the hunter end up supporting the ecological health of the land.
Now, LeaseSpotter is the tech platform, but the AHLA itself, I've been around longer, right? This isn't some new startup.
No, and that's critical for the trust factor. They've been at this since 2010. They have over 5,000 hunt clubs using their services already.
And they provide more than just the listing service, because my big fear as a landowner would be liability.
The number one fear.
AG.
And yes, the HLA provides the whole infrastructure. They have a customizable legal lease agreement, so it's all official.
Yeah.
And most importantly, they offer a hunting lease insurance package.
Ah, insurance. That's the linchpin.
It is the safety net. It protects everyone involved. It removes that fear that stops so many landowners from ever saying yes. Sean Fabrash's whole mission is to make leasing safe, ethical, and worry-free. The insurance is the worry-free part.
So they're really trying to professionalize what used to be a very informal tradition.
Professionalize and stabilize it. Informal traditions are fragile. They break. By building a whole system, a marketplace, contracts, insurance, they're building something resilient enough for the modern world.
Okay, so let's recap. We started with a frightening number, 2 million fewer hunters. We found the villain was a lack of access. And the solution, the tool, is LeaseSpotter.
A free platform connecting landowners and hunters, but it's all supported by that back end of insurance and legal agreements from the AHLA.
It's a modern solution to an age-old problem. It's an admission that we can't go back to the 1950s. We have to adapt.
And that adaptation involves tech and a clear value exchange. It's wild to think an app could be what saves a heritage lifestyle, but that's where we are. The tech is the tool, but the goal is preserving that land and that tradition.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to chew on. We've talked about this win-win economic model, but it does raise a pretty big question about the future of the outdoors.
It does, the question of monetization.
Exactly. In an age of declining outdoor participation, are we heading for a future where the survival of these traditions relies completely on monetizing access? Is a hunting lease the only firewall left between wild habitat and, well, a parking lot?
It's a provocative thought. We love to think of nature as being free, but maybe in the 21st century, the only way to keep it wild is to give it a price tag that can compete with concrete.
Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
My pleasure.